Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Hi, I'm Dr. Roy Morgan. This program is Health Essentials. The radio station is KBJS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, and Longview. I remember reading years ago that there was a study on men that had had heart attacks, and in the study, all they did was give the men pomegranate juice. And the men that had pomegranate juice, once they ended up in the hospital, they were able to recover and leave the hospital 40% faster compared to those that were not. And so I came across another article about pomegranate juice. Okay. All right. I'm trying to think, where did I get this from? Man, I can't find the study name, but I've got the research right here. All right. It has to do with consuming pomegranate juice and or to perform or improve the performance of your mind and your memory. They go on to say that if your memory is starting to fade as you age, a daily glass of pomegranate juice can help. Neurologists at the University of California in Los Angeles, they were able to see on MRI scans that pomegranate juice improves the cooperation between parts of the brain involved in the process of memory. Now, they have, you know, on the computer, and this is just a black and white copy of the study that I made, but on the computer it's pretty cool because it shows you all the different colored images of the brain that light up when somebody is consuming pomegranate juice. Okay. Pomegranates contain substances that improve the functioning of the blood vessels. This is why pomegranate may help improve memory function in the elderly. As we age, blood vessels in the brain, they clog up and they reduce the functioning of our memory. So if your blood vessels are clogging up, does that kind of give you a clue that you can't get oxygen and nutrients and all the products you need to the brain cells? Yes. Does that also mean that you can't really wash away the waste and the debris? Yeah. Well, they're saying that pomegranate may actually help correct the situation. Okay, in this study, the researchers tested this particular theory in an experiment involving 28 forgetful volunteers. Of course, the average age was 62 to 63. So they tried to like dial it in exactly on an age group. Half of them were given a flavored soft drink containing no active ingredients. That means they had a placebo for 4 weeks. The others, guess what they were given? A large glass of pomegranate juice. Here's the results. One of the ways they measured this is they looked at the concentration of urolithin A. That is the compound they measured in the blood of the latter group of people, those that drank the pomegranate juice. And you're probably asking, what is urolithin A? Well, it's a metabolite of agallic acid, in which large amounts of this polyphenol, guess what, they're found in pomegranate juice, and also produced by bacteria in the gut. Okay. They did two different tests during the supplementation period. The researchers assessed the subject's memory. Remember, there were 28 of them that were noticeably forgetful, and they were between age 62 and 63. The average age was 62 to 63. I'm so sorry. That means there's probably some people a little bit younger and some people a little bit older, but that's what they averaged out. All right. You cannot see the chart that I'm looking at. But what they're doing is they're measuring the memory and the recall after they're given tests, and it shows that those that took the pomegranate juice, they radically outscore those that did not. So if you're thinking, what can I do to help improve the function and performance of my mind and memory? Folks, I'll just make it sound even simpler. You do not have any business losing your mind as you age. Do whatever you can to protect it. And so this is one way. And so when the subjects were digging in their memory, trying to recall information, they noticed that the those that consumed pomegranate juice All of a sudden, they showed on the brain that the basal ganglia, the thalamus, and the hippocampus became very active. This was not the case for the placebo group that had the placebo, which is called a Big Red, probably. Anyway, that is interesting right there. This next study, I find it so interesting. I hope you do too. Where does this come from? Okay, I'm just going to read it to you. Just let me know what you think about this one, because I find this one so fascinating. This is literally a gold mine of information. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to like it like I do, but it's just one more confirmation about what is good and what is right. Okay. The title of the article is, or the study, Obituaries Reveal the Secret of a Long Life. Guess what that is? It's called religion. Okay. Religious people live roughly 4 years longer than people who are not members of any religious community. American psychologists from Ohio State University come to this conclusion in the study that will shortly appear in Social, Psychological, and Personality Science. The researchers analyzed several thousand obituaries that appeared in the American newspapers between 2010 and 2012. This is study number one. There's two studies in here. I'll read them both to you, and I'll make it fast. In their publication, the researchers described the results of two studies. The first one, it involved 505 obituaries that have been published in the Des Moines Register. I guess that's in Des Moines, Iowa, a newspaper that appears in the American city of Des Moines. Duh. If the individual described in the report was a member of a religious community, that person in question would have lived an average 9.45 years longer than the average person in obituary in Des Moines that didn't have anything to do with any religious affiliation. Does that make sense? Okay. They go on to write that your gender, whether you're male or female, and that's the only two options you got, and marriage also affect how long you can live. So when the psychologists brushed away the effect of these two factors, meaning gender and marriage, then the religious person still lived 6.48 years longer than the non-religious individuals. Okay? Do you think that attitude has something to do with this? You know, doesn't the Bible say, count it all joy, and everything give thanks? Yeah. And so I'm looking at the chart here, and I realize you can't see it, but from the chart, to me, this is what it looks like. When there's an obituary and there's absolutely zero mention of a person being a member of, let's just say, the Buller Church of Christ, then what you would see is they lived an average of 73.5 years. But when I look at the numbers of the study, it's usually in the it's plotted as age at the time of death in years, versus mention of religious involvement, either yes or no. But those where there was a mention of being a member of a church or participating in religious activities or it being important to them, oh my goodness, they lived to be about 80 years of age, actually right at 80. So that's like about 6.5 years difference. Of course, they say that it's 6.48. I'm just telling you what the chart shows. Study number two. In a larger study, the researchers analyzed 1,096 obituary reports from 42 different cities. So it's not just one city like Des Moines, Iowa, okay? The analysis showed that religious people had lived 5.6 years longer than those that were non-religious. Now, after the researchers brushed away the effects of sex and marriage, religious people still would have 3.8 years longer than people who had not been part of a religious community. Okay? And of course, I'm looking at that one here, and it looks, it's the same. They live about 4 years longer. Anyway, I just find that so interesting. They're saying that, here's the conclusion of the study. The study provides persuasive evidence that there is a relationship between religious participation and how long a person lives. This says co-author Baldwin Way in a press release. That comes from Science Daily, June the 13th, 2018. Religious affiliation had nearly as strong an effect on longevity as gender does, which is a matter of years of life, adds the first author, Laura Wallace. We found that volunteerism, you know, that's doing good stuff, volunteering to help other people out, and involvement in social organizations only accounted for a little less than 1 year of the longevity boost that religious affiliation provided. So they're saying there's still a lot of benefit of religious affiliation that this can't explain. The researchers can only speculate that those other benefits would be many religions promote stress-reducing practices that may improve health, such as gratitude, prayer, or meditation. Of course, what does the Bible say over... What is the number one command in all the Bible? I'm not saying the most important one, but the one that's probably mentioned the most is probably fear not. Okay. All right, I have another one for you. This one I like too. Because everything that I'm telling you this morning, everything is within the ability of you choosing to do it. Does that make sense? Yeah, of course it does. See, you've got to have this belief system that health... One of the things that makes it so exciting to talk about this topic is there's so many different ways you can go about doing it. So it's not like you have no options. You're not helpless. I mean, you can, yes, I know that's true. You can convince yourself you're helpless and there's nothing you can do. And you know what? Maybe there's situations in life where it is extremely difficult, where you can't see any way out of it. But what I'm talking about is, what are things that give you hope? What can you do to help yourself? So that's why I talked about the pomegranate juice. That's why I talked about a belief in God. Here's another one right here. Researchers at Oeste University State in Brazil, they had 29 older women. This is a study on women. And the average age was 66. What they did was they talked them into doing strength training classes 3 times a week. And in this program, these women followed in the study, they really just focused on very large muscle groups. So just think, for example, legs, gluteus maximus, back muscle, that sort of thing. And what they did was they had them do repetitions where they trained with about 60 to 70% of the weight at which they could manage one rep. Does that make sense? So if they could, say, do a squat with 80 pounds once and that was their limit, or say they could do a squat with 50 pounds, well, they had them do repetitions where they would do about 60% of that. So that might be 30 pounds. Multiple reps. They say the participants in the study, they rested for 1 minute between sets. That might be a key point also. And so they had a control group of 9 women in the study that did no training whatsoever. That was probably super, super hard to get people to participate for the no training group, right? Ha ha. Here's the results. They said that the strength training group, and I think this study went on for like 12 weeks. Okay. The strength training group had no statistical significant effect on their body weight or their BMI, their body mass index, or the size of their waist, which is usually a pretty accurate marker. The experiment was too short for such effects to be observed, the researchers suspect. And that tells you another point. Whatever you do, do it consistently over a long period of time. That's where you get the benefits. Okay, here's what the results were. The women who did the strength training, they became stronger at least in a period of 30 seconds. They were able to make more reps when curling a dumbbell of 2.3 kilograms. And they were able to stand up more often from sitting, which I know that sounds unusual, but they noticed the women that did the strength training, they could get up a lot easier out of a chair. Might be important to maintaining one's balance. You don't want to lose your balance. You don't want to trip and fall easily. Or if you do trip on something, you can catch yourself because you're strong enough to do so. Okay. Well, as a result of the strength training, they also scored 20% higher on the Montreal Cognitive Assessment Questionnaire. And they said that there was something strange about the test scores. The Montreal Cognitive Assessment Questionnaire measures a whole range of mental capacities, from spatial awareness to memory function, from concentration to as abstract reasoning. All those are important. The higher you score, the better. This is like an overall questionnaire that helps assess what is your mental performance. I mean, haven't you ever talked to somebody and they just could not put together, you know, something from their past or their memory, or they couldn't put together a sentence or a thought that was clear? Yeah, that's not good. They said that the maximum score on this Montreal Cognitive Assessment Questionnaire is 30. And as a general rule, psychologists, they start to wonder where there's something amiss with a person when the scores are way below, or they start getting below the number 26. And so, but it tells you basically how mentally fit a person is. And here's the conclusion. The present studies show that the strength training protocol applied for 12 weeks to elderly women. I'm not trying to be negative by saying you're 66 and you're elderly. That's not what I'm here for. But the women increased their balance, their flexibility, their strength of their upper and their lower limbs, but they also increased their cognitive performance. To me, that's really important. Based on our results, we can recommend strength training programs for the elderly, women that aim for improvement of general strength and cognitive performance. Remember, they got, 20% better when it came to cognitive performance after 12 weeks. I don't know of any drug that can do that. Do you? Is there such a thing that's just hope against hope? They want a drug to do something that costs a lot of money, that has a lot of side effects to it, and can literally wreck you, not only your kidneys or your liver, but also other parts of your body. But it doesn't do what strength training does. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. If you want to join me on the radio, the phone line is open at 903-586-5257. There is an open line here at the radio station. So, obviously, I like questions that are geared toward anything to do with how do we improve health. I know you do, too. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. Be real quick, because probably half the world needs this right now. How can we naturally get rid of an upper respiratory cough?
How long have you had the cough?
Since last Saturday. And I did go to the doctor, yeah. And they gave me some really nasty cough syrup.
Taste-wise?
Yes. And it's, you know, all that's doing is just making the cough go away for a few minutes, or me not feeling the tickle in my throat.
Now, do you actually have a tickle in your throat right now?
No, not right this minute.
Do you have any discoloration that's coming up?
That has changed to clear.
Okay, good. Was it green or yellow for a while?
Yellow, yes, sir.
Okay, well, let me give you some simple ideas. There's an herb called Andrographis. You ever heard of it?
No, sir, I haven't, and I've been all over Drug Emporium. Andrographis.
Can I just make a comment about Drug Emporium?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You cannot place 100% of your confidence on the staff being able to find it for you.
I understand that.
That's just like the recurring theme. I love Drug Emporium, but if you rely on the staff to tell you where it is, they're not going to be able to find it either.
Yes, sir.
So as long as you go looking for it, you're looking for a substance called Andrographis. And There's other options. I mean, you have two other, three other, four other health food stores. But Andrew Grampus is shown to be really, really good when it comes to an upper respiratory tract infection. Okay. And a lot of times, you know what the other herb that they usually add to that is?
No, sir.
Echinacea and golden seal.
Oh.
And so if you find a combination where andrographis is just one ingredient, but it's mixed with echinacea or maybe the herb called mullein historically is so good to help the lungs to heal. But okay. Golden seal, anytime that you have mucus-lined membranes that have a high water content, that may be a good application for golden seal. So if you can't find the andrographis, go with echinacea and golden seal.
Okay, super.
Now, the other thing
that works for me.
Yeah, the other two or three things that you can do is, number one, you can get some mullein tea.
Okay.
So you could drink mullein tea. If it were me, why don't you just go ahead and kill three birds with one stone? You can add some fresh lemon juice to it.
You could
add a spoonful of raw honey to it. Doesn't have to be a huge spoonful. Mm-hmm. But all those things are so, so good. And I know what I would do if it were me, though. And I know this sounds weird, but let me have a go at this.
Okay.
If you had a steam kettle on your stove and you turned that on where it came to like a hard boil, I'm talking about out of the throat of the kettle, it's like a column of hot steam is just boiling up and aiming straight toward your face. If you can just stand over that with a towel and breathe that in, steam is so good at helping dissolve any gunk or inflammation that's in the lungs.
Okay.
But if you could do
Should
that for 10 minutes.
Peppermint?
What now?
Would peppermint help in that kettle?
Yeah, it really could. I mean, actually, I like your idea. So between peppermint and eucalyptus, and there's even there's a spice that I think it's used in a lot of Italian seasoning called thyme or thyme.
Yes, I have all this stuff on the shelf almost, except the first three.
Well, no, you got it right now. Even if you don't have the other ones, you can do that. The other thing that you can do is you can rub castor oil all over your upper lung fields of your chest. And if the sun comes out today, just sunbathe your chest a little bit. Or your back. You want the natural radiant energy of the sun striking the skin over your back or your lung field. Does that make sense?
It does, and I appreciate your time so much.
And then you can have a man walk up behind you with his hands, and he can start, like, beating the evil spirits out of your lungs to make that cough go away. What do you think about
normally my husband would do that, but he's busy coughing too, so...
Well, then you can sneak up behind him and drive the evil spirits around. I'm joking. Okay, but those are good things you can do, and sometimes... Even adding a little bit of apple cider vinegar to the mullein tea with the honey and the lemon is a good call also.
Super.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate
you.
You're welcome. I hope that helps a whole bunch.
It does. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. There is a phone line open. This program is Health Essentials. My name is Roy Morgan. The number at the station is 903-586-5257. If you have a question... Okay, thank you so much for your phone call.
Hi, Dr. Morgan.
Hello.
I have a friend of mine who wants to know why she's losing hair and what she can do to prevent it.
Okay, has she been really, really sick here recently, like with a viral infection?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, let me say it this way. Hair is usually very low on the totem pole for a woman. Which means if there's other systems in the body that are under assault or they're really stressed, your body will say, you know what, we're going to take the energy for hair growth and we're going to use it over here somewhere else. And so if I just went down, let me give you like a bunch of different ideas. I have seen over and over again when a woman doesn't produce enough hydrochloric acid in her stomach, the hair will start to fall out. And so there's two or three things she could do. Number one. She could start sipping on lemon water before every meal. Another simple technique is just to use plain Jane apple cider vinegar. And if you could sip on a little bit of that before a meal also, that helps improve stomach acid.
Okay.
The next thing, there is my most favorite herb of all time, is called Tillandsia root. Usually, the way that I get it, though, there's a product called 4-Til B12. But I get to ask every single woman when they take it, is this helping your hair? Is your hair growing back? And I had a woman... ma'am?
So that was what? For?
It's, well, it's spelled F-O-R, and then the second part of the word is T-I-L, like 4-Til, like you're going to... It's almost like the word fertile, but with an O in it. It's okay. Like it's like you're trying to fortify and increase fertility of the hair. I know it's a play on words. But it's called 4-Til B12, but the main ingredient is called Tillandsia root, which it looks like a kind of a, excuse me, creeping moss that grows on a tree like in Florida, Georgia, South Carolina. But it's one of the most effective ones that helps stimulate that. The other thing that's been shown to be helpful is blackstrap molasses. So if a woman could just take and make herself like a morning hot toddy, that's kind of like what my mother would do. She would just take a cup of warm water, heat it up, and add molasses, apple cider vinegar, honey, lemon. Those would be all really, really good things to stimulate that pathway. Now, this next one is just my opinion. But there's an element or a mineral found in nature that's called silica. And silica plays one of the strongest roles in women in causing hair to grow. And so one of the most common herbs, I'm just saying the, I know I said 4-Til B12 because it contains Tillandsia root, but the herb that contains a high concentration of natural silica is called organic horsetail. And a lot of people actually go to these nurseries and they buy this flowering plant, to like an ornamental plant they put in the flower bed in front of their front door. And a lot of times it's just organic horsetail. Mm. And so you can take that as a supplement. You can also just purchase what's called organic silica. And a lot of times it comes in a liquid form or in a usually liquid form. But they could take that to see if it would rejuvenate the hair. Now, if somebody's had an infection, like a viral infection, that's probably the cause why the hair's coming out. So if you could just tell the woman to start taking echinacea every day, you would see if that helps get her through it.
Is that in a supplement pill form?
Yes, ma'am, it can be. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, the other one, I know this is going to sound weird, but just kind of hear me out. If I'm at a very large store in Jacksonville that begins with the letter W, which I know you don't know what I'm talking about, but if it begins with the letter W, I can walk into the aisle where they have, I guess, beauty products. That's everything from, like, natural soaps to natural products. They have, like, a little short aisle there in that store that begins with W. And they have a big, large bottle of castor oil, and I want to say it's like $9 or $10 for the large bottle. And then they have a teeny tiny bottle of castor oil, and it's for like $15. Do you know what the difference is?
No.
The small bottle says it's to stimulate the growth of hair.
No.
So, marketing geniuses, but what they do is they say to make your eyelashes and your eyebrows grow, but there's no difference between the castor oil and the large bottle and the one that's teeny tiny, except It says, rub this on your eyelashes. And you know what? It really is true. If you apply castor oil to your eyelashes, it does make them grow. It's not going to make them grow like these women that have glued on. Have you ever seen women with these huge eyelashes?
Yes.
Are you doing that yourself, young lady?
No.
Oh. But castor oil is very famous for stimulating the hair to grow back.
Okay.
So wherever you rub castor oil, it does help that area heal. Can I tell you a story from like a week ago?
Sure.
This woman calls me on the phone, and her voice was in such rough shape. The poor woman, and she's an amazing woman. I really like her a lot. She's a very traditional, God-fearing woman, and she's so kind and so sweet and humble. Reminds me of another woman that I know from the Van area. But anyway, But this woman, she had such horrible laryngitis that she was just in misery. You know what laryngitis is, don't you?
Yes.
So she calls me the very next day, and the only thing that she said she did was rub castor oil directly over her larynx or her throat. And her voice sounded pretty much normal the next day. I'm going, isn't that amazing how simple castor oil? So never underestimate the power of castor oil, because when you apply it, it definitely improves blood flow to that area. And I've seen it work wonders before when people had horrible tingling of a extremity, or if they had horrible restless legs. So never underestimate castor oil. Now, if you're rich, you should buy the teeny tiny small bottle that maybe has just an ounce or two of the castor oil in it, instead of the very large one that costs less. I'm just joking. I just think that's kind of comical how they market that. Hey, you know what? I'm going to start just selling a dropper for $45.
Wow.
But those are things that you could think of to stimulate hair growth. And, of course, hair is made of protein. And so high-quality protein, that could be everything from eggs. You know what? One of the easiest forms of protein that to digest and to assimilate and use, it's usually fish.
Okay.
Now, if I asked you a personal question, would you be willing to eat salmon?
Yes.
Do you have any problem with flounder or cod or something like that?
No.
Would you eat a fresh octopus? I'm just joking.
No.
You passed the test. Anyway, so those are some ideas to restore hair growth.
I sure do appreciate it, Dr. Morgan.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm glad to hear your voice, and I hope you have a great day, ma'am.
Thank you much.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have a phone line open here at the radio station. That's 903-586-5257. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Could you tell me what we could do to prevent Parkinson's? My mother had that, and I don't want to get it.
Now, I am not trying to make a joke at all by what I'm fixing to tell you, but I just read an article about Parkinson's about 3 days ago. Can I tell you what it said?
Sure.
Okay, number one, they did a statistical analysis, and they showed when somebody smokes cigarettes, it's nearly impossible to come down with Parkinson's.
Uh-oh.
Well, that doesn't mean I'm telling you to smoke cigarettes. That's not what I'm saying here. But the other part of the equation was, so when I read that, I thought, okay, what is the deal here? Why is that? And I really think that's okay to ask, why would that be effective? Because, again, I'm not trying to be negative, but yes, if you said, oh my goodness, we have Parkinson's in the family, what can one do to prevent that? Well, I'm not recommending that you start smoking cigarettes. That's not my solution. So they know that there's a compound. Have you ever heard of the family of fruits and vegetables called the nightshade family?
Yes.
Okay, so in that family, you've got tobacco, you've got eggplant. I can't even come close. If you put me to the test right now and said, hey, Dr. Morgan, name all the peppers that grow on Earth, well, I would be lost pretty quick. I could say there's a banana pepper, there's a cayenne pepper, habanero, bell pepper, but I'm going to run out of peppers pretty quick, but I know there's a lot of them. But the compound that's found universally in nightshades is called nicotine. You ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's one of the components that's concentrated. So in this study on Parkinson's, they said, okay, what would you have to do to get a very similar effect of the beneficial aspect of smoking cigarettes? Now, you know as well as I do, if you smoke two packs of cigarettes a day, the person's risk of developing lung cancer and living a shorter life goes way up, doesn't it?
Right.
So you know as well as I do, that's not an effective strategy to recommend cigarettes. Plus, you'd have to be rich to afford them anyway, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people buy a carton of cigarettes like at the gas station when I'm trying to fill up with gas. You can spend $80 on a carton of cigarettes if you want to. That is outrageous, mm-hmm. isn't it? Mm-hmm. Anyway, have you ever heard of a pepper spice called paprika?
Yes.
That's what they found works so well. So they think that cayenne pepper works, and of course, I actually meant to copy that study off last night, but I didn't do it. It's my fault. But I remember what it said. It said that if you had a little bit of paprika, that was shown to be very beneficial at preventing Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the other studies that I was looking at, they showed that one of the most critical things of all time is you've just got to set your mind like Flint, that you've got to train and train and train and train and train. That means exercise and workouts and more exercise. And it's one of the greatest techniques of all time to preventing Parkinson's.
Okay.
If you want to have Parkinson's, a high junk food diet's a way to cause it.
Wow. Okay.
But paprika, that's something you can do.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I'm so thankful for your phone call today. I really appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. There's a phone line open again. It is 903-586-5257. 903-586-5257. If you want to call and make a ask a question or make a comment. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you today?
I'm just fine.
Excellent.
I'm just wondering if you have worked with people that have OCD, if there's something you can do besides medication.
Yes, ma'am. There was a study done years ago, and the only thing that they looked at with those that had OCD was taking what's called cod liver oil.
Mm-hmm.
And cod liver oil did every bit as good as the medications they give.
Okay.
But let me take it a step further. So much of how the brain... Well, let me ask you a question. You just tell me what you think. Do you think controlling one's thoughts has any application to how the brain functions and the thought processes work?
Oh, yes.
Would you say it can be challenging when you kind of get off track and you start thinking thoughts that produce and generate radical anxiety and depression?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one component, is trying to rewire the brain where you can start thinking better, higher quality thoughts. One of the ways of doing that is pretty simple and straightforward. Putting something in front of your mind that's good and wholesome. That might be actually called reading. So, I'm not trying to make a joke here, but, you know, you could spend your time listening to heavy metal, acid, rock and roll. You could listen to music that's really not wholesome at all. It doesn't have a good message, or you could listen to music that's probably very, very good and uplifting. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
And you could actually read information on the internet that's just very unproductive. It doesn't make your life any better, but that you could start reading stuff like from the Word of God that actually makes your brain and your body better. And so that's one aspect. The other thing is just the discipline of daily exercise has been shown to be very, very good. So I'm going to say it a different way. Maybe one of the components of obsessive-compulsive disorder is a lack of proper order to their life. This is just one component, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The more tidy and organized that a person is, the better when it comes to OCD. So what would that look like? The moment they wake up in the morning, they make their bed before they do anything else, and they do the best job they can.
Oh, he does that.
Oh, good. He's on the right track.
He's a teenager.
Right. Well, and you're kind of getting a step ahead of me, but I like it, though. So what you do is, now this is meant to be a joke, okay? What are you going to have for breakfast? A big bowl of Fruit Loop cereal, or are you going to have bacon and eggs? One of those is going to generate more inflammation, more anxiety. The other one, the eggs for breakfast are like an omelet. Could you imagine if he had 3 eggs for breakfast and an avocado? What that would do
he
for
does
his
that
brain?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay, good. If he does it consistently, like making his bed, then we can put it to the test and see. But the Fruit Loop cereal or the Lucky Charms or cocoa sugar explosive hydrogen bomb breakfast cereal, all that right there is just full of chemicals, hard on the brain. And so I'm always trying to, if there's any altered thought process, man, I just want to feed the brain what it needs.
I guess he's on the right track. He works out. He's involved in his church group.
Oh, good. Man, this is awesome. How old is he?
He's 16.
Can I ask you just I'm trying to make this as vague and general. I'm never trying to embarrass anybody, but what would you say is the top manifestation of his OCD? What does that look like?
His room is immaculate. His bathroom, his toothbrush lays in a certain place. You know, it's to the point that I think it bothers him that it has to be that way. If he comes into your house and things aren't straight, he gets uncomfortable.
Okay.
You know.
So you're saying
now it's getting worse in that he's now needing to make sure that doors are locked and lights are off, and we'll double check them, and you know that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it bothers him that he feels like he has to do that, but it seems to have gotten a little bit worse. He's always been a neat kid and had everything in its place, but.
Does he seem to sleep well?
I think so.
Does he wake up for the most part refreshed and going, man, this is a great day?
Well, he gets up at like 6 o'clock and goes to the gym.
Okay, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there may be a little glitch in how he's doing this maybe to the extreme, but he's trying, isn't he?
Yes, yes, yes. So maybe he's on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen it take in the other direction where the behaviors became very, very harmful. So I would probably do a literature search. This would actually be super easy to do. I could probably look up OCD and come up with about 1,000 different articles on how to go about it. But there's a book called Who Switched Off My Brain by Caroline Leaf. That's a good one. You ever heard of that before?
No, I have not. I will check that out.
Yeah, and
what's the name of it again?
I think it's called Who Switched Off My Brain by Caroline Leaf. Like the leaf is falling from a tree.
Okay.
She's a very interesting woman.
I've read some of her material.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever received an article from her on the internet and said, oh, this is very interesting? Or actually, you could go onto YouTube and you could type in Caroline Leaf discussing OCD.
No, but I'll sure do that.
Yeah.
When I start researching, it seems like all I get is, well, if this doesn't work, do medication, you know. And
well, and I understand the medication, but all you're doing with the medication, and let me tell you what I was going to say before we got off on this right here. All right. And this is just going to be my opinion, so you can take it all with a grain of salt. But at the end of the day, if you use psychotropic drugs or medications, that's obviously a doctor, a nurse practitioner, mm-hmm. a physician's assistant, a psychiatrist. Everybody can recommend all those, and that's their prerogative. They can do that. But if you look at the long-term studies, they do cause more inflammation of the brain. And so with a 16-year-old boy, his brain is not fully developed yet. We want to make sure he has the fullest chance for it to develop to his fullest potential. He actually might be 25 before his brain stops really growing to its full potential. And so there is a spice that is used in adding flavor to exotic Mediterranean cuisine dishes. It's called saffron. You ever heard of saffron?
Yes.
Well, you can actually buy saffron in capsule form, but there are many studies that show that if a person has this just under the surface angst or anxiety or uncomfortableness about the order of things, then saffron can be extremely helpful. And one of the things that saffron does, it has this really unique ability to decrease inflammation of the brain cells or the neurons. In which, I kind of do this stuff all day long. I always ask a person, well, how did you feel after you took the saffron? I don't think I've ever had one complaint. I mean, I've got plenty of things they might complain about, like I didn't like the way that tasted or the way that smelled or that was yucky. But saffron is one of those very, very gentle things, and it can be extremely beneficial to target the healing of the brain.
Okay.
Just like I mentioned earlier. The brain really does require a certain amount of good omega-3 fatty acids, so consistently taking a cod liver oil supplement, that would be huge. Okay. But usually with OCD, I'm always looking for what I'm going to call a hidden food allergy. And that may be like a very loose, simplistic way of saying it, but I'm looking for anything that might be contributing or causing or interfering with normal brain function because it's generating inflammation. So what if he had an allergy to corn? Or what if he had a hidden allergy to wheat or to dairy products, something like that? Well, I'm trying to figure that out.
Okay.
Anyway, but these are ideas.
Well, I'm certainly going to consult that book.
Absolutely. Good job.
Thank
and if you,
you
will,
so much.
read about the use of saffron. See what you come up with.
Now, that saffron, can that be, can you just take that in the form of a supplement?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And I'm sorry I didn't say that to you, but yes, that's exactly it. You figured it out. You can, you could probably order, usually they come in standardized capsules of like 88.5 milligrams.
Uh-huh.
And you could give him easily two in the morning and two in the evening, so for a total of four capsules a day. That is a sufficient dose usually to get the job done. And then just see if he seems like his brain is more calm and functioning better.
Okay.
You got nothing to lose.
Thank you.
Or you could fly to the French Riviera and they could make a dish for you. It would only be $800 a dish. No, I'm joking.
I've just never personally used it in cooking, but I've heard of it.
Have you ever had saffron rice?
I don't think I have.
Well, I think you'll like it.
Thank you so much.
You're sure welcome. Have a great day, ma'am, and have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just joking about that a little bit. But I think that some of the more expensive restaurants may actually use saffron and or things like truffles, things like that, which would probably increase the price of a cheeseburger. Good morning. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. I'm well. How
Yay.
Are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Oh, great.
Thank you for your phone call.
Yes, sir. Dr. Morgan, I would like to know more about yeast infections. I've had this little issue on my under my nose, and we started treating like, well, maybe it's a liver kind of situation. But
well, how many antibiotics have you had in the last year?
Well, I don't think I've had any.
Okay. Have you had any surgeries?
So, a couple of years ago, yes, I did. I had my gallbladder removed.
Okay, now they do give fairly significant amounts of antibiotics when you have a surgery.
Okay.
Do you know what the purpose of the gallbladder is?
Help digest food, I suppose.
Yeah. One of the other main components of the gallbladder is to keep your body clean and free of toxic waste. And so when your body is filled with lots of toxic waste and debris because you have no gallbladder, that's what yeast does. Yeast feeds on the toxic waste, and so the whole solution is trying to clean and repair your body.
Okay.
Would you say you're doing a good job at hydrating yourself?
Yes, I think okay. So, yes.
Are you doing a good job of staying away from refined sugars and grains that would feed the yeast?
Fairly, yes. Okay. Well, only recently.
Well, if you have a little bit of a rash under your nose, the first thing I would think of is vitamin A. And the biggest dose of vitamin A that I know of, well, and the reason it's called vitamin A is A for the anti-infection vitamin. Because usually when the tissues of the body have plenty of vitamin A, which the gallbladder is supposed to help you absorb that, and without one, that may be a problem. But the tissues become stronger and more resilient, so they don't really succumb to a yeast infection. There's got to be debris and a weakness in the body for yeast to grow, so you get vitamin A from eating liver and onions.
Right, right, and I do.
Good.
And I do, occasionally anyway.
Well, every little bit helps. That's good.
Now, why would some people be more susceptible to yeast than others? I mean,
because they have more dirt and debris and toxins that have accumulated.
Okay. Okay.
You so that would be, okay. And so that would be, so like, you could also donate blood if you wanted to try to reduce that burden on your body.
Ah, good. Okay.
You could focus on drinking dandelion root tea.
Right.
That helps clean. Do you have good bowel movements?
Lately they've been up and down.
Okay. So there's
either one way or the other.
One of the simplest techniques that a woman could try to get rid of the yeast or the yeast burden in the body is just taking a supplement called lactic acid yeast. There's another one called Saccharomyces boulardii. These are probiotics that when you swallow them or you chew them up, what they do is they go on a search and destroy mission to help get rid of the yeast and toxic germs in your body.
What was that other one?
It's called... I know. I'm so sorry, too. And please, whatever you do, I'm begging you, don't make me spell it on the radio. The name of the organism is called Saccharomyces boulardii. I think Saccharomyces is spelled Saccharomyces. I probably did that too fast. It's a type of probiotic yeast that when you swallow it, it starts cleaning up the body. See, you weren't born with yeast infections and you weren't born with weakness. Your body was perfectly clear and clean. Now, is your urine pretty clear and clean?
You know, actually, I can detect an odor that actually smells yeasty.
Well, then that's what you're doing.
You know, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's a yeast infection. I'm pretty sure it is.
What do you feel like are the areas of your physical health and your your health that you need to improve?
Well,
I mean, just from your perspective, what is it that you think that you need to improve? What is your body telling you right now that needs to change?
I need more rest.
Okay, well, and see, you're really hitting on a huge one right there, because when you sleep at night, that's actually when your immune system does its greatest work at clearing all the toxic organisms from the body. I think I read the other day, and I hope I don't get this wrong, but they asked the question, what is the one time of the day that your body is the most efficient at killing tumors and cancer cells? So I told myself, I said, hey, Roy, you're going to read that article. And guess what it was? It was the 1 hour before you wake up in the morning. So, and I'm not trying to make a big deal about that, but I'm just trying to tell you, if there's one time of the day that your body heals, it's when you're in that deep, deep restorative sleep. So what would it take to prioritize getting more rest?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Is that a hard question to answer?
No. Simply, you know, stop burning the midnight oil.
Is burning the midnight oil keeping your body in a state of infection?
Probably.
Do you take time to exercise and care for your body?
Yes, I do. Yeah,
excellent.
I do. Yes, I do.
And it may be that you're like other women that have spent their entire lives taking care of the needs of husbands and children and maybe involved in church and everything else, and you probably didn't have much time to take care of yourself. Could that be true?
Oh, yes.
Well, this might be a good day to prioritize. If I don't take care of myself, I'm going to end up in a bad place, which we don't want that.
Right. Okay. All right, then.
Well, I hope I helped you a little bit.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day, ma'am. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. The phone number is 903-586-5257. Going back to that reference point that I made, I just found it so interesting that if there is one time of the day that the immune system, meaning the natural killer cells and the efficiency of the immune system, was at its greatest, it was during sleep. It was not during the waking hours. I find that so interesting. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm blessed. Good morning, sir.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, thank you so much for your phone call. How can I help?
We've been listening to you forever, and I've got a question for you now on things that I'm doing for food. You know, it's the season for eggnog now, and I'm making my own eggnog because I've got my own chickens. And in making the eggnog, I've taken the recipes that have sugar, and I delete the sugar, and I include natural honey.
Okay.
It came from Wells.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, is that okay?
Man, raw honey is like always okay compared to regular sugar.
Right, but is that okay to use that regularly? Is that going to turn into the same problem as sugar?
Okay. I think that as for the most part, we need to have days where we have no sugar whatsoever. And so if you use honey, honey's probably the safest and the most awesome source of a sweetener that actually has tremendous health benefits to it. So you're making a great choice. I just think you just got to be careful how much of it you use. Can I tell you one thing real quick? This was years ago, and I think this was published by Dr. Greg Anderson back in the 1990s. I know you don't remember that because you were just an infant then. But anyway, in this study, they took a group of men and women, and all they did was they gave them 4 tablespoons of raw honey a day, and they just let them consume it however they wanted to. So if they wanted to stir it into a big pitcher of tea and drink it, that's fine. But what they did was they measured all their blood work. And so these people, they did like a CBC with a differential. They did a lipid panel, a comprehensive metabolic panel. They did that at the start of the study, and then the race was on. 4 tablespoons of raw honey for men and women every day for a month. And at the end of 30 days, guess what they did? They came back and they repeated the laboratory analysis. Would you care to guess what happened?
Got better.
Every single one of them, every number improved statistically. And I thought, how could that be? But it's true.
Okay.
So I don't think you can do that with drinking 4 Coca-Colas a day. I don't think it's going to work out that way.
Okay. Change subject a little bit. Corn, we hear so much bad stuff about corn. What about if I get some of the heritage type corn?
That's your best choice. You're on track. Yep, that's good.
Okay, and is popcorn better than regular corn?
Absolutely. I don't think they've been able to genetically modify popcorn, so that's probably the safest corn to consume.
Okay, in terms of part of my diet, is that okay?
Well, everything with moderation. I mean, I don't know how physically fit you are. I don't know what your blood work looks like. I mean, if you had an issue with diabetes, you're going to have to. You can't consume a lot of popcorn.
I'm real healthy, and I walk 2 to 4 miles most days.
Do you do it while wild boars are chasing you?
Well, for a little bit.
Okay, then that's good. That's called interval training. No, I think that'd be fine.
Okay. Yeah, great.
Well, thanks for your phone call. I think we're officially out of time. God bless you. I appreciate you. Thanks for your phone call, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.